Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. A plant-based and/or fish diet can help lessen the severity of COVID-19 infections. Who says? Johns Hopkins University. An article published in the British Medical Journal Nutrition, Prevention, and Health. What they're saying is that a plant-based and/or fish can help lower the odds of developing moderate to severe COVID infection. That's exactly what the vaccine was supposed to do. And this suggests the findings of a six-country study. They were associated with a 73% and 59% lower odds, respectively, of severe disease. So the plant-based is 73% with no side effects. And those are good numbers, unlike the 95% efficacy rate of the vaccines, which were actually 0.8%, not even 1%, 73%. So just imagine that those in this audience who are skeptical and who are not fully into a healthy lifestyle thought, well, that doesn't make any sense. That doesn't sound like good science. This is a year ago, when I was advocating build up your immune system by going to a healthy plant-based diet, then publishing four different articles online, fully documented, showing everything came from PubMed, or the Library of Medicine's official repository of the best science. Think how many lives would be saved throughout the world. Here in America, at least 250,000 lives could have been saved. But what do we know? When Anthony Fauci is guiding everything, and the imbeciles in all of our federal agency, and that's all they seem to be, compliant with the corporate motto of only drugs count, and yet we were on the right side of that. For those of you who followed the advice, good for you. That's very important. So here's the science once again, showing we're right, unfortunately, and they're wrong, because they're being wrong, meaning don't do anything until you have to be so sick you got to go into a hospital, but wait for the vaccine. Let me repeat this. Johns Hopkins University finished an article. It was a multi-country study. Six countries participated. 73% if you have a plant-based diet from developing or the severe COVID symptoms. So that's important. Also, we have a whole study I'm going to talk about magnesium associated with reduced hostility among young adults. Columbia University did this. But I want to let you know that we have some other stuff coming your way today. For example, we're going to talk about the horror of teaching critical race theory to kids. They're lying to you if science cause COVID, what next? Russell Brand. And do we live in a sick society? I wouldn't say that we live in a sick society. I would say there are people within our society who act out in ways that are not to the betterment of them or anyone else or the planet. So this is really a good commentary. And we'll play that a little later. And then you can call in and share your points of view. So we have to start, of course, with the latest on health and healing, something that will impact everyone. Magnesium is that very important mineral. In my opinion, the most important of all macro minerals. But according to the new study, quote, hostility is a complex personality trait associated with many cardiovascular risk factors, phenotypes. Although magnesium intake has been related to mood and cardiometabolic disease, its relation to hostility remains unclear until this study. So they took 4,716 young adults. They did a prospective analysis, and they had a baseline, and they were 18 to 30 years of age, and it was a part of the coronary artery risk development in young adults study. Now, magnesium intake was estimated from a dietary history questionnaire, because very few young people take magnesium as a supplement, and that's the best way of getting it. But in any case, according to the news editors, the research concluded, quote, the inverse association was independent of socio-demographic or major lifestyle factors, supplemental use of the depression status at year five. This prospective study provides evidence that in young adults, high magnesium intake was inversely associated with hostility level and independent of socio-demographic or major lifestyle factors, end quote. What that is saying, when he talks about inverse, it means the more magnesium you had, the less hostility. The less amount of magnesium, the more hostility. Now, I can confirm this in my own independent study. I've done 49 studies now, and one of those was with ADD and ADHD children. Another was with autism spectrum disorder children. And the study was not about how they became that way, because there's multiple environmental factors, not the least of which are, like the MMR vaccine was a contributing factor. And the government has actually acknowledged that, and has actually, through its vaccine adverse report system, has actually given money to families for autism. And they actually call it autism. That's one division of government. Another division, like the FDA and CDC, oh, there's no association. Well, clearly, they're not to be trusted because it's been shown they've lied. But what I did in my two studies, I started off by looking at what are we dealing with. And almost always we're dealing with the disruptive mitochondria. So for those of you who have children or teenagers or young adults, how's their health? How's their intestinal health, their digestive health? Are they taking foods that support a healthy biome or healthy bacteria, or those that contribute to an unhealthy one, like sugar and soft drinks and coffee? And so when we cleaned up the diet completely, and all the parents were there with the children, that was part of the stipulation, and following the same identical protocols, and one of the people was a physician, a woman physician. Her husband's also a physician. And at the end of 3 months, this study was a three-month study, we had about 55 young people in the study. On the last day, they got up and before, you know, everyone else and on camera, they reported on the results. And this woman said, I would never have thought that something as simple as a diet could cause my kids to behave in such a way that they had. In the morning, after their caffeine, they were bouncing off the walls and we had trouble in school. But now they're calm as can be, just normal kids. And she said that was a real eye-opener. So that went, and magnesium was crucial in this. Calcium and magnesium, and calcium and magnesium were in equal amounts and fairly high because all the kids were deficient. So just check your magnesium. My suggestion, between 700 to 1,000 milligrams in divided doses each day. Now, this study is from University of Minnesota. The study compares heart benefits of a low-fat implant-centered diet versus high-fat. And the findings suggest that a plant-centered diet can help lower heart disease risk. Well, that's a big deal, considering right now heart disease in two forms, and that would be heart attacks and strokes, account for the number one reason that people die in the United States from illnesses. Now, there's been a long-standing debate as to whether a low-fat or a plant-centered diet is better at lowering the risk of cardiovascular disease. And the new study followed 4,700 people over 30 years, and they found that a plant-centered diet was associated with lower long-term risk for cardiovascular disease. However, both diets were linked with lower LDL. That's good. That's the bad cholesterol levels. So good news for those of you who are on a diet consuming legumes, whole grains, nuts, and seeds. If you're not a vegan, fish. My suggestion on fish for those who are going to consume it, go for sardines. That's the healthiest of all fish and the least toxic. So that was published in Nutrition live online. Now, another study, this is interesting because so many people drink coffee or have caffeine in the energy drinks. This is from Mount Sinai School of Medicine, published in Ophthalmology. Quote, high caffeine consumption may be associated with increased risk of blinding eye disease. Consuming large amounts daily of caffeine may increase the risk of glaucoma more than 300% for those with a genetic predisposition to high eye pressure, according to the International Multi-Centered Study. So just give up on the caffeine. And also it will help you overcome a lot of GERD or gastrointestinal problems and help protect the sensitive lining of your esophagus from esophageal cancer. Also allow you better digestion because caffeine is also a diuretic. So a lot of people, believe it or not, take their vitamins in the morning with caffeine, like coffee. And that means a lot of that's going to be washed right out of the body. There were 120,000 participants in this particular study, so it's a good study. University of Guelph, that's in Ontario, Canada, red onions pack a cancer-fighting punch. So, just remember when you're walking down the aisle, there's a tendency to look for the Vidalia or 1040 or Maui onion. They're sweet onions. But the one that really packs the power in your body is the red onion. And it does many things, lowers blood pressure for one, thins your blood, help preventing stroke from the coagulations and aggregation of red blood cells. It helps fight off cancer. And that's what they found in this study. Because red onions are killing cancer cells. And keep that in mind, not all onions are created equal. And the red variety is number one. Now, onions, without doubt, are a superfood. And they're terrific. They're loaded with quercetin. That's a flavonoid. But onions that are particularly high in quercetin, well, that would be your red onion. It's the highest of any onion in quercetin. But it's also high in antho, A-N-T-H-O, cyaninins, C-Y-A-N-I-N, anthocyaninins, which enriches the scavenging properties of quercetin molecules. Anthocyanidins is instrumental in providing color to fruits and vegetables, so it just makes sense that the red onion, which are darkest in color, would have the most cancer-fighting properties. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Food Research International. From RCI University of Medicine and Health Science in Ireland, published in Psychosomatic Medicine, exercise likely to be the best treatment for depression in coronary heart disease. Now put the two together. Nobody feels good when you have a major and potentially lethal disease, diabetes, cancer, Alzheimer's, Parkinson, and any form of heart disease. So people can get depressed. And when they get depressed, that depression then floods the brain and the body with cortisol. Cortisol is your fight-or-flight hormone. You need it, but it's only there for a short period of time. Like suddenly in the middle of the night, you hear something, you're immediately awake. And that cortisol, epinephrine, norepinephrine, catecholamines, they're rushing through the blood and to get to the cells to make sure your muscles are stronger, your sound is more acute, your vision is sharper. And then it passes in about a minute, minute and a half. Just ask any runner what happens when you're feeling great, but you're a little nervous and the gun goes off and you go out too fast. You'll feel good for about a minute, then everything goes south. And then your muscles are tighten up. You're starting to feel the pain from the lactic acid buildup in the shins and the arms. But when you meditate, you go out in a meditative state, you know, you're not fighting against yourself. So the idea is, what do we do to help people who have heart conditions or cancer? Exercise. The key is exercise. This is the first systemic review to compare treatments for depression in those with coronary disease, and the findings provides really good clinical observations. And so I suggest mindful meditation works. I do not support antidepressants at all. I've seen too many people who've used them and thought about suicide, and others who have killed themselves. So why not just get a runner's high, flood the body with endorphins, get that oxytocin high, the love hormone? You do that when you go for a power walk. Unfortunately, antidepressants have all the money behind them and all the false promises. I'll be asking my guest next Tuesday night about there is no longer science-based medicine. It's corporatized medicine, and he is an expert in the field. I'm going to ask him about psychiatric drugs. Also, our final discussion is from the University of Iowa. They want to know about chemicals, specifically biphenyl F and biphenyl 5. They're known by BPF and BPS. They're being used increasingly in food packaging manufacturers. And what they found was this: the plasticized materials, when you put something in a microwave oven, if you're foolish enough to do that, it ends up leaching out. You overboil something where there's plastic, and you're seeing a lot of these pouches, food coming in pouches. They just say, well, just for convenience, just boil some water and put the pouch in there, and 5 or 10 minutes later, it's ready to eat. Yes, and those same plastic chemicals are coming into your body. This study shows that they are disrupting your endocrine system, causing numerous health problems. So that's not good. So something to consider, all right? Use only stainless steel or glass, something that is not going to leach, and plastic leaches. That's the latest on Health and Healing. We are 18 minutes into the program. Just a few reports, then we're going to take a break. This is important. This is from Life Site News. Quote, COVID hospitalizations, deaths for the vaccinated more than triple in 1 month. CDC reports, quote, a total of 10,262 SARS-CoV vaccine breakthrough infections. That means someone who did not have COVID got the vaccine and became COVID because of the vaccine. Quote, defined as coronavirus infections in fully vaccinated people, reported to the CDC from 46 U.S. states and territories between January 1st and April 30th. Quote, deaths and hospitalizations for COVID infection have tripled among the fully vaccinated in the United States in the past month. Deaths from COVID in those who have been fully vaccinated against the disease increased from 160 as of April 30 to 535 as of June 1st, according to the data from the Center for Disease Control. So where are all those promises, get the vaccine and you won't get COVID? Well, that's not true. So something to consider. Oh, and by the way, from Tree Hugger, good publication, by the way, Catherine Martenko, vegans are happier than meat eaters. Just in case you need another reason to go plant-based, quote, vegans have long been portrayed as an angry, self-righteous group of individuals, but a new survey of 11,537 people across the United States is doing away with that stereotype. Surveys from Tracking Happiness found that vegans are in fact happier than meat eaters. Okay. They polled 7.2 on a scale of 1 to 10. Terms of personal happiness. Meat eaters, by contrast, were 6.8. So, something to consider. That doesn't mean you don't find some self-righteous vegans. You do. I meet them all the time. Never will forget this one. There was a dinner after a film festival, and the people who were nominees and some other directors, we went out for. Someone knew someone who was going to make a meal. And a person who volunteered to drive because I was going to miss my train back to the city. I said, don't worry, I'll drive you. So we had a wonderful meal, wonderful in the sense that the people were just sit around a table with people from Russia and Germany, Spain, Italy, who are doing their best to bring documentaries to the screen. And you hear all the challenges they have. And you hear the tough go to get it funded and how difficult it is to get into a film festival. If a film festival doesn't select your film, there's very little chance that you're going to get any distribution at all of it. So you've made a film for yourself. Nobody else is going to watch it. And that's about 95% of all documentaries. Anyhow, I just thought it was just a great evening. And then we started to get up and leave. And I turned around. My driver wasn't there. Okay. And then when we went outside, someone else said, well, I'll drive to the train station. No big deal. And here over comes this young person. She says, I thought you were a good person. You're not. You're a hypocrite. I said, okay. Why am I a hypocrite? They were serving meat, and you ate the meat. I said, really? How do you know? I saw it. So I'm not going to drive you anywhere. I said, that's fine. Not a problem. And so I said, before you leave with such self-righteous contempt, come in for a moment. I said, take a look. The plates are still on the table. And I said, this is where I sat. The broccoli's eaten. The potato was eaten. Look under the napkin. I didn't touch the meat. I cut it up, had it on my fork, but I put it under there. Why? Because the way it was left, the person who had opened their home at their own expense, bought food, and served us a meal, did so because they were sharing a positive and virtuous energy. And I wanted that person to know I respected their hospitality. Therefore, it was not an issue for me to say, well, hold on a second. Serve me a vegan meal. Put a person in that position. And so I thought about the other person and not making an issue. And I didn't. And that was it. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm sure you're going to find another reason in life to be angry about something and misplace that. People do it all the time. Also, this is from Megan Redshaw, Children's Health Defense. Good publication, by the way, Robert Kennedy's. Pfizer, skipped critical testing and cut corners on quality standards document reveal. New documents obtained by Tri-State News suggest routine quality testing issues were overlooked in the rush to authorize use of the Pfizer vaccine. That's not good. And the governments are now involved in this massive vaccine program, spending $3 billion just to convince you to vaccinate, and they cut all the corners. Not good at all. Also from the environmental segment, water emergency alert is issued as Brazil is facing drought. It's official, Brazil is facing drought. Earlier this month, the government issued a hydric emergency alert for 5 of the 27 federation units. It's the first in over a century, more precisely 111 years, which tells something about the seriousness of the situation. So, now one of the most important countries for stabilizing carbon dioxide emissions, the great rainforest, are dying. Why? Because there's a whole lot of people involved, including the people who are farming the logs, that are farming the soil for genetically engineered soybeans to feed to cattle so that China and other countries can have all their beef, including, by the way, Amazon and Jeff Bezos. That's also in there as well, a whole discussion. So when you go vegan, it may seem insignificant as an individual, it is, but there's not just a few of us. There are millions upon millions of us in the United States. So that's doing something to reduce the suffering of the animals and also to save the planet. And they're doing it around the world as well. So it's not enough, but at least we're making an honest effort to make it a better world. So what you consume does make a difference. We're going to take a break, and when we come back from our break, we're going to go to a DVD. And this one is, Do We Live in a Sick Society? And whether you agree or disagree with this, it's very insightful, it's very deep, and it's the kind of thinking that we should be doing more of. Then I'll open it up for your calls. You can call in and share your points of view. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Back with Do We Live in a Sick Society in just a moment.
Life, with the consequence that it loses all power to understand itself and has no standards, no security, no simple acquiescence. Do we live in an age where normality has become a sickness? Has our society become so corrupt that the more we adapt to it, the less functional we become? In this video, we will explore these questions. What it means to be normal is relative to the society in which we live. Across time and place, and from culture to culture, the standards of normality differ. But while normality is culturally variant, there is an essence to what it means to be normal, and this essence lies with conformity. To be normal is to be a conformist. It is to be guided by the status quo, to accept the dogmas of one's age and to adhere to the dominant value system of one's society. Or as the psychologist Stephen Bartlett wrote, psychological normality is the set of typical and socially approved characteristics of affective, cognitive, and behavioral functioning. A set of characteristics derived from the reference group consisting of the majority in a society's population. For much of human history, spurring the norms of one's society was a risky proposition, as it increased the chance of being rejected by one's social group, and so decreased the ability to survive and pass on one's genes. Conformity, in other words, is a trait that was selected for through the process of evolution, and this can help account for the strong pull we feel to be normal. Another factor that makes normality attractive is our tendency, like all biological creatures, to take the path of least resistance. Life is too complicated to improvise novel ways of dealing with all situations, and so most of the time we just do as others do and think as others think. That mankind has this inborn disposition to conform is a good thing. It promotes social cohesion and cooperation, and it allows a society to develop in complex ways that would be impossible were we not a conforming species. But just because conformity helped us survive in times past, and just because a modicum of conformity is needed for a society to function, it does not follow that conformity is always life-enhancing. Instead, the value of conformity is contingent on the conditions of the society in which we live. What is more, conformity must be balanced by a healthy dose of nonconformity, lest a culture is to stagnate. For it is nonconformity which creates the new, exposes the flaws of the old, and helps push a society toward better frontiers. In the West, however, there is a tendency to overvalue conformity and to label, stigmatize, ostracize, and in extreme cases even institutionalize anyone who deviates too far from the accepted standards of normality. Benjamin Rush, the founder of the American Psychiatric Association, epitomized this view with the following statement. Sanity, aptitude to judge things like other men, and regular habits, etc. Insanity, a departure from this. Reflecting on Rush's pronouncement, Stephen Bartlett wrote the following. For Dr. Rush, social conformity is synonymous with mental health, and social nonconformity with mental illness. In the two intervening centuries since Dr. Rush made his diagnostic pronouncements, the standard of mental health set by conformity with the psychological norms of everyday society has remained exempt from serious challenge. By mainstream psychiatry and clinical psychology. The problem with Rush's definition of sanity is that it is built on a faulty assumption. It assumes that the norms of a society cannot become corrupted, and that normality cannot be the cause of mental illness. In a flourishing society, Rush's definition of sanity may hold. But when a culture becomes sick and a society corrupted, normality becomes a standard that arrests, inhibits, distorts, handicaps, and delays one's healthy development. Adapting to a sick society produces sickness. conforming to a mad world produces madness, and in such cases Rush's definition of sanity is flipped on its head. Sanity becomes a departure from normality, and normality approaches insanity. What is more, associating mental health with conformity overlooks the fact that too much conformity can easily produce an unhealthy psychological and behavioral rigidity that sets the conformist up for great suffering should he or she be destined to live through some sort of major societal upheaval. Or as Carl Jung writes in his book, Psychological Types, the normal man may indeed thrive in the surroundings of his society, but only up to the point where he and his milieu meet with disaster for transgressing the laws of reality and human nature. He will share the general collapse to exactly the same extent as he was adjusted to the previous situation. Adjustment is not adaptation. Adaptation requires far more than merely going along smoothly with the conditions of the moment. It requires observance of laws more universal than the immediate conditions of time and place. The very adjustment of the normal individual is his limitation. At times of social stability, conformity can make life easier, but at times of social instability, the greater our conformity, the more our mind will act like a mirror and reflect the chaos of society back within. For this reason, a social crisis can easily induce a mass identity crisis throughout a population of ardent conformists. Or as the sociologist Gerald Platt explains, the loss of familiar social orders and one's place in them is potentially chaotic. People who can't sustain a biographically achieved sense of personal identity, continuity, feelings of worthiness, self-esteem, membership in a community, and so on, are easily overwhelmed by affective experiences. When these conditions are widespread, the society is undergoing a sense-making crisis. Many people these days, facing the prospect of having to reestablish order and meaning to their lives as our societies change, desire for a return to the status quo. But going back to the way things were, while probably not even possible, would not be beneficial even if it were. For the past paved the way to the present, and as many contrarian thinkers have warned, the West has been in a state of sickness and decline for decades, and normality has been a corrupted standard for just as long. What is different now is that the unremitting might of reality is crushing the illusions that blinded many people from seeing the sickness of modern-day normality, and which kept them believing that conforming to such standards was the safest path to take. But as Aldous Huxley prophetically warned over 60 years ago, the real hopeless victims of mental illness are to be found among those who appear to be most normal. They are normal only in relation to a profoundly abnormal society. Their perfect adjustment to that abnormal society is a measure of their mental sickness. These millions of abnormally normal people, living without a fuss in a society to which, if they were fully human beings, they ought not to be adjusted. That normality does not equal mental health can be seen in the high rates of anxiety disorders, depression, and suicides, and by the widespread abuse of drugs and alcohol. What is more, the mob mentality and groupthink, which has been raging on social media for a decade and which is now playing out in the streets, is a further sign of the collective insecurity of our age. Helplessness and panic, wrote Jung, lead to group formation, or rather to a clustering together in masses for the sake of gregarious security. But perhaps the simplest way to judge the value of Western normality is to ask the following question. Does the average man or woman come across as a strong individual who is armed with the character traits to face up to the challenges of life? Or to paraphrase the author Richard Weaver, does the typical modern have the look of the hunted? Given the sheep-like reaction to the current crisis, and the ease with which most people can be induced into a state of utter panic and fear, the latter option seems more likely. We are on guard against contagious diseases of the body, wrote Jung, but we are careless when it comes to the even more dangerous collective diseases of the mind. If a collective disease of the mind has spread across much of the world, the only solution for those of us who wish to maintain our sanity is to learn what facilitates human flourishing and to build our lives around such foundations. For while the standards of normality are culturally variable, what produces human flourishing is more constant. We have an abiding nature with roots that stretch far back into our evolutionary history, and as Jung points out, when a living organism is cut off from its roots, it loses a connection with the foundation of its existence and must necessarily perish. And here may lie the fatal flaw of the West's conception of normality. It fails to properly account for the demands of our nature, and one of the glaring ways in which it does this is by providing inadequate outlets for what Friedrich Nietzsche viewed as the most fundamental of our drives, namely, our will to power. For while many people are aware of the dictum, absolute power corrupts absolutely, few understand, as the psychologist Rollo May wrote, that the absence of personal power can be equally corruptive. At an individual level, powerlessness leads to envy, victimhood, and an apathy that promotes mental illness. While at a societal level, a population of disempowered men and women paves the way for tyranny. And so, given that a healthy dose of power promotes individual health, while simultaneously diminishing the inequalities of power that corrupt a society, in the next video, we are going to explore the psychology of power.
Interesting thoughts. I'd like to hear your thoughts now. What would help Americans of all backgrounds, of all nationalities, ethnicities, cultural differences, what would allow us to feel more cohesive, working together, more in alignment with what we can share that's positive instead of the differences? Starting our day as if today is when we begin our journey, without ever having to use anything from the past, good or bad, as an excuse, but rather say, today I have control over my life. I might not have a year ago or 20 years ago, but today I do. I can make better choices. I have a greater support system. There's more people open to more diverse ideas about how to live. What can I do to be a part of positive changes? It's very easy to tear things down. It's different when you're trying to build them up. We need a society where we're building up now. By the way, there's from the Children's Health Defense, Megan Redshaw is telling us that there's 27 experts who launch a citizen's petition demanding the FDA, quote, slow down and get the science right before approving COVID vaccines. I found this interesting, so I decided to open it up and read it in its entirety. I wanted to see who were these 27 clinicians and scientists and researchers. Were they the low-hanging fruit, people that we all know, or were these people at the top of the establishment? So they're saying they filed a petition described in Title 21 of the Code of Federal Regulations, allows individuals and community organizations to request the agency make changes to health policy. At any time, any interested person can request the FDA, quote, issue, amend, and revoke a regulation or order, or, quote, take or refrain from taking any other form of administrative action, end quote. In their petition, the group outlined many unanswered questions surrounding the efficacy and safety of COVID vaccines and detailed how data must be collected before the FDA considers granting any vaccine full approval. Quote, we are concerned that the premature licensure of a COVID-19 vaccine can seriously undermine public confidence in regulatory authorities, particularly in long-term safety issues if they were to emerge following licensure, end quote. In an op-ed published today in the British Medical Journal, four of the petition's signatories, writing on behalf of the group, said, quote, the message of our petition is slow down and get the science right. There is no legitimate reason to hurry to grant a license to a coronavirus vaccine. We believe the existing evidence base, both pre- and post-authorization, is simply not mature enough at this point to adequately judge whether clinical benefits outweigh the risks in all populations. Now, why is this important that I'm reading this? Why is this important you know this? Because you would never hear any of this anywhere else. It's as if it doesn't exist. The New York Times is not going to tell you about this. We're telling you about the actual number of deaths. And we've never had a riot. We've never had a mass killing. We've never had anything like 9/11 that compares the number of dead and injured. In fact, the number of injured are approaching the number of Americans injured in World War I. So this is a big deal, and yet it's not being dealt with as if it's a big deal. So here are some of the petition signatories. We have Linda Waspia, Tilia, PhD, professor at the University of Maryland School of Pharmacy, Peter Doshi. Dr. Peter Doshi is also associate professor of University of Maryland School of Pharmacy and very important in the scientific community. MD, PhD, Patrick Whelan, a professor of pediatrics, David Geffen School of Medicine, UCLA. We have an MD, PhD, leader of the Department of Pharmacy at the University of Heidersfeld, and David Light, PhD, professor of comparative health policy and psychiatry, and Florence, who's a MD and professor of pediatrics, Harvard Medical School, Bourgeois, Morgan Kaplan, PhD, distinguished research professor, UCLA Fielding School of Public Health, Peter McCullough, MD, professor at Texas A&M College of Medicine, the most published author and over 1,000 articles in all of PubMed, professor of genetics, University of Leicester, Anthony Brooks, Dr. David Healy, professor of psychiatry, McMaster's University in Canada, Dr. Byron Bridle, biologist, immunologist, professor at University of Guelph in Ontario. We're talking about heavyweights like Christine Stable-Bennen, MD, PhD, and professor of global health, University of Southern Denmark. And we have several of these, and this is all from around the world. Wow. This guy's the Peter Culligan, infectious disease medical doctor, microbiologist at Canberra Hospital and professor at the Australian National University Medical School. And Dr. Peter Gochi, professor and doctor of medical science and director of the Institute of Scientific Freedom in Denmark. That's just half the list. We're dealing with Professor Emeritus at MD, PhDs, University of Munster in Germany, Dr. Ulrich Keil. So these are the top of the top in their field, and they're all saying the same thing. Don't do anything more with this vaccine till you know that the science is right. Good for them, because we need them to stand up for all of us. And by the way, this is from Freethought Project. The tip of the iceberg. County officials find 25% of COVID deaths, quote, clearly not caused by COVID-19. 25%. So if we took 29% off of COVID and put it into other categories like heart disease, emphysema, cancer, that would bring that number down substantially. Now, if then we add the CDC's own criteria that only 7% of people have died strictly from COVID, then it no longer registers as a pandemic. Quote, in California's seventh largest county, Alameda, health officials have made a rather bombshell admission. 25% of all deaths attributed to COVID-19 in the county of 1.6 million people were actually not caused by the virus at all. Wow. But we haven't been told that. No one is suggesting any of the cautionary principles. We're going to go to another piece here in a second. I just want to let you know a couple program announcements. First, by the way, I'm no longer in New York. My apartment was sold. I don't own it. I didn't own it. I lived there for 28 years. But the landlord says, you're out. Okay. So I moved. I was looking last night through some of the boxes I just opened. And I had all these photographs that people sent me from lectures, and there must be thousands, and dance parties. And then there were videos that people had made of the dance parties. And I'm guessing, based upon the 55 dance parties I did and how many people attended, some 5,000 people over the period of an evening, that probably 85,000 people came to those dance parties. And some of them are up on YouTube. You can watch them, and they're fun. And you'll see yourself back then. And compare that to how you look and feel today. It'd be kind of a fun thing. And I remember Virginia Reed, who has passed, she was a tall, really dynamic human being who was just one of the best dancers in the world. But there are some great dancers. And I was watching one last night. There's Anna Goldwasser and Reed Eder. And Then there was Adria Eisenmeyer, who she was my producer for 13 years. Wonderful producer, wonderful human being. I don't know where any of these people are. I don't know what's happened to them in their life. I don't know when I see people at a lecture or a dance party or a gathering or what happens to them. But I'd be interested in seeing some photographs and little stories. Talk about what has happened in the passing years, how you're doing. All right, I hope you're doing well. And those are just remarkable moments that we all shared together. Yeah, it's just wonderful. So I'm just going to spend some of my evenings, when I stop writing, take a couple hours and just reminisce. I'll post some of them also for you. This coming Sunday at noon, I'm going to have my second discussion, and that is with homesteading. I can't go into deep discussion now, but I will on Sunday at noon, and I'll give you a phone number you can call if you want to be a part of it. It's for people who've got some time, anywhere from a month to or longer, to be a part of about five different projects we currently have going on, and I've decided to allow qualified people, maybe two, to join us. If you like cooking, we have John C. from California, who's heading our cooking projects. He's mastering fudge, and he just mastered five fudges. Only three of the staff died testing the first group, but he's gotten better. We don't have a big staff, John. Perfect him now. And then he just perfected gluten-free vegan donuts with a marble glaze out of coconut and raspberries. So he's got like 80 different items that we're making, going to take farmer's market. I'm trying to show people how to be off the grid and how to earn an income and also be around positive people. If you like gardening, we have hydroponics and sprouts and microgreens growing, over 80 variety of vegetables. And that's Angelo's project. So we can have someone work there. And then later, freeze drying. We already have all that commercial equipment. We're going to do it. And then if you're into art, John Q, we're going to be doing art and take him to county fair, see how we do. John Q is a master artist, and these people live there. So if you want to come and join, it's free rent. We give people food and place to stay and guide them. It doesn't cost you anything. You can actually earn some stuff. You'll give a call if you want to be there at noon on Sunday. You'll call this number. Write it down, 712-451-0200. 712-451-0200. The PIN number is 444-555. That's 444-555. Then you're all set to go. Then I'll explain everything. It took about an hour and a half last time answering the questions. And I think we had one person that sounded really up for being a part of a homesteading project. Anyhow, that's that. Now, the next and probably the final retreat will be the last 2 weeks of September, and I'm going to do something different. It's not going to be an anti-aging project this time. It's going to be a mindful meditation retreat. All these new people are coming in. Mindful meditation, Tai Chi, Qigong, energy work, yoga, advanced yoga, lots of healing energy work, and all the people I'm bringing in to be a part of it will be teaching throughout the day. And it's specifically to help people deal with anxiety and depression and to get their whole energy up, because when you do that, their immune system comes right up behind it. So people need to chill out. People need to be grounded. People need to have something that is uniquely their own to live for, that others can benefit from. So if that interests you, you can give Luann a call and tell her that you're interested in that. And I'll give you Luann's number. You can call Luann at 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. That's the last 2 weeks of September. Because then I'm going to be repurposing everything for the homesteading projects and a Veterans Village, which we're hoping to launch. plus a senior dog retirement home where I will take in senior dogs or abandoned dogs or shelter dogs and bring them back to health and happiness. I'm building a state-of-the-art vet center, indoor, outdoors, big, gigantic 12-acre field to run and play in. And I know what I can do bringing animals back to life. So that's going to be doing a lot of things. Finished up my anti-aging work. Now I've got to go to the next step. Oh, talking about the next step, I was just informed that we have a special today. And here is the special. And this is a whole package. And it starts with green apple and lemon. That's a wonderful tasting drink, but really, really good for you. And it's got the lemons in there and the green apple. But that's the powder. But coming with that, you're getting Vaccine Nation, because you really need to know all of the details about vaccines from the scientists working in the field. Then you're also getting a sample of another product and digestive stuff. And digestive stuff is terrific. And in digestive stuff, you're getting you're getting protease, amylase, cellulase, lipase, bacillus, subsilicis, 10 billion probiotics. Of course, the organic ginger root and organic cinnamon bark and organic aloe vera leaf and organic marshmallow root, anise seed and fennel seed and slippery elm bark and stevia, bananas and apples and pineapples, papayas and bromelain, and all the good digestive stuff. You're getting that at a tremendous savings. And you're also getting, I think it's the, what are we giving? The red stuff? Yeah, red stuff sample here too, with the strawberries and blueberries and raspberries, grapes, pomegranate, prunes, acerola berries, goji, cranberries, acai, bilberry, grapeseed. It's one of the most popular products I create. You're getting a sample of that. So you're getting a great package. The whole package is a big discount. I don't know what it is, but it's, I think you're saving 50%. It's valued at $114.90. You're only paying $57.45. 50% savings. So give a call to order the package. That number to order this special package with the green apple and lemon stuff, 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And let's see if we have any calls here. I'd be happy to take the calls. I'd like to hear from people. No calls? None. Okay. Well, then I'm going to share a little bit more information with you. I have a lot to share. And this was in the British Medical Journal, why we petitioned the FDA to refrain from fully approving any COVID-19 vaccine this year. Now, I mentioned the people who wrote the petition, some of the finest scientists in the world, put their reputation at risk to do this. Good for them. And that they're out there working on your behalf. They didn't have to do that. They risk being attacked for doing that, but they're doing it anyhow. And also, I'm very concerned about what is happening with people giving their DNA. For example, when you go to one of these sites, ancestry sites, when you give your DNA, it's impacting all the other people in your family. I have a special protocol for that, and I'm going to give that on tomorrow's show. Also, I'm going to be doing an original in-depth investigative report on tomorrow's show. But I'll close with this. According to The Guardian, the richest 25 Americans reportedly paid, quote, true tax rate of 3.4%. 3.4%. Their wealth skyrocketed. We're talking about Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, Bill Gates, etc. And that's why I've advocated for a long time for one flat tax for all corporations. You don't need the IRS then. You don't need the accountants. You don't need to keep receipts. It's just, let's say, for argument's sake, 20%. That's it. All the money stays in the United States. You forgive the money that comes back in. You charge a 20% tax on coming back in. That would give us a couple $1 trillion. And so everybody, every corporation would then be paying the same amount. If you want to make it 15%, that's fine too. But this way, no more of these rich people making billions of dollars and paying 3.4%. That is just unjust, unfair. We're out of time, everyone. I want to thank you for taking your time. And I'll look forward to being back tomorrow with a brand new, in-depth, original investigative report on the corruption of science in our country today. Have a nice day, everyone.